between the two largest distributors of pull tabs and the operators of bingo in the state. And this bill is an attempt by Mr. Mitch Bravo, the Charitable Gambling Association of Alaska, to finish off a coup de grace on their main competitor. And I resent the use of legislation to fulfill those kind of purposes. I think there's a great moral question that's going on in this bill. It's not an underlying theme, it's a pretty overt thing, that it's just not addressed, it's not being addressed by this legislature. And that's the direction of the sales of these pull tabs in establishments that sell alcohol. And I think the linking of those, the charities and liquor establishments, is just fatally flawed. I think it's bad state policy. If it is not the cause, it's certainly exacerbated by the use of alcohol. All the charities that theoretically are providing services to people in need in this state, their clients are people who have been affected, either in their families or themselves, by alcohol. And what we're doing is forever linking the sales of these pull tabs to alcohol establishments. And I think it's a very, very bad union. I think it's wrong to promote that. It's wrong to link these two concepts. And once again, I very strongly question the figures that have been used, that 600,000 of this is being used by charities, by labor unions, and by others to donate to political campaigns. I don't think that those figures are correct. I think, if anything, the figure is more in the line of between 100 and 200,000, which is 0.1% of the money that's being wagered on pull tabs. I don't consider it to be a problem. I think the inadvertent, or perhaps the advertent result of this, is that we're telling public interest groups who hold raffles and who conduct bingo that they can't use their monies to hire lobbyists. I was told today that the Alaska Environmental Lobby, which is a very above board group and holds a very successful raffle of all kinds of excursion trips and things that promote the general well-being of the state, they can't use the money that they raise in their raffle and their fundraising effort during the year to hire their lobbyists. And I think that is outrageous. I really do. I think that it's wrong. I think this bill is basically directed at Democrats to try to eliminate any source of fundraising that Democrats have. We do not rely on $1,000 contributors like the Republican Party. There are very, very few $1,000 contributors that contribute to Democrats. And I think the preponderance of those types of contributors to Republican candidates assures Republicans of some sort of monetary support, but that in some cases, raffles, bingos, and pull tabs do provide some needed and necessary funds to Democratic candidates. In fact, the use of charitable gambling in this very small 0.1% instance is the closest thing that we have to public financing of elections in the entire state, or will have for a long time. So the other problem that I have with the bill is that I think it gives very, very short shrift to the concept of multiple beneficiaries. I just spoke with the Mayor Craig outside in the hall. I hadn't seen him in a while. I said, "Dennis, how are things down there? Say, do you guys have any charities in Craig that operate down there that do pull tabs?" He says, "Yeah, we have a real problem with the charity that we have there. He's a multiple beneficiary. He promotes games for four or five different organizations in Craig, such as the Little League. He came to us last year whining that he couldn't afford taxes, and we're finding out that he's giving 15% max to these charities. And so 85% of this adjusted gross income is going into the pockets of this operator, and he's not even paying taxes in the city of Craig." So I think that you do have some loopholes in this bill. I think that this has been given very little scrutiny by the committees. I think it's almost been a perfunctory gesture to try to ram this bill through. And I think that the lack of scrutiny and the loopholes and the actual wrong concepts and intent of the bill fatally flawed. I think it's an expansion of gambling. It's a linking with alcohol. And I don't think it's received any scrutiny that it should have. So that's my testimony, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any questions? Next person I have is Commissioner Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'll be very brief. I gave you some additional information that had been requested by Representative Davidson, and that's this listing of all the campaign contributions. And I did want to show that this really isn't a partisan issue. If you look at these lists, you see that Democrats and Republicans are receiving campaign contributions. You also see that for a lot of these organizations, it's almost the sole reason why they run a full tab game. You'll see a little bit of charitable contribution every once in a while, like the Anchorage Bucks baseball or something like that, but it's almost all political contributions. We did include one sheet for the Valdez Democratic Precinct to show that as a precinct, with the parties, there's no limit. The $1,000 campaign limit does not apply, and one candidate here received a $10,000 contribution in one check. The other thing that I wanted to say was Chip Tomer raised a couple good issues here, and I wanted to respond to those. As far as this being a war between two operators, the bill as it currently is structured would not affect either operator, and they would both be able to continue in business. There is strong competition between the two groups. The other group that Chip was talking about is one of the better operators in the state, and we really don't have a problem with them. They've been one of the more consistent in meeting the regulations. The other thing, in terms of the operator in Craig, it's true now he only has to give 15%, but under this bill he would have to give 30% to the charities. One more point I wanted to make, and it'll be my last point, then I'll take any questions that you might have, is in addition to this bill bringing vendors, operations that are currently in bars under our regulatory processes, where we can get a handle on these guys, which we don't have any now, and there are strong provisions if they break the rules for us to step in and revoke their permits for up to 5 years. There is also a clause in here, it's in the title, and if you'll turn to page 7 of the bill, line 16, section 515.124 is written into this bill an additional protection that municipalities, at their local option, by ordinance, can prohibit vendors from operating in their community. So if it did turn out that there was abuse of this, the existing law says they can also prohibit operators. There are significant opportunities for local option to control this beyond the overall controls for the state written in the bill. Thank you.
Representative Davidson, clear office.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a couple of questions here for the commissioner. And I'll start with the statement that my community, in fact, has, in fact, outlawed operators. So I appreciate that part of the bill. But my question to the commissioner is, do you foresee where this will increase economic opportunities for holders of alcoholic beverage package or dispensary permittees?
In what sense? I need you to clarify the question.
Will this, in fact, increase the value of a bar license?
I don't know that it will increase the value of a bar license. I don't see where there would be a tie-in there.
You're saying that the fact that the bar owner now can become a vendor is not going to increase his revenue from this kind of activity?
It may or it may not. It depends upon what his operating expenses are, and if they choose to do that. A lot of bars just, pull tabs do not fit the image they want to portray with their bars, so a lot of bars don't want to do it.
What is that image, in fact? Is it, I don't know enough about it.
I don't know. Some of the places, I don't think you're going to see them in the whale's tail of the Captain Cook, for instance. I mean, you probably won't see them at bars that are attached to restaurants. In fact, that's one of the few places in Juneau that doesn't have it, is the Breakwater over here.
So upscale bars generally don't indulge in this kind of activity?
Well, in general, but I'm sure that's not an absolute rule.
Have you ever done an analysis of where, a zip code analysis of where the revenue from these kinds of activities generally come from?
No, we have not.
And if you were to do that, what do you think would be the result from your knowledge of this issue?
I don't know. I'm sure you'll find it dispersed throughout the state.
My point, Mr. Chairman, is this bill, I think, will increase, in fact, the mixing of alcohol and gambling. And we've heard some indication that maybe the upscale bars probably won't have any impact, or they won't probably engage in this kind of activity, which makes me conclude that probably people who can afford to do this activity will not, in fact, do this activity. And therefore, it places the funding of nonprofit organizations primarily on the backs of those who are probably going to need most of the services of those nonprofits, in the sense that, you know, where there's a need. for people to, and I think that with our workshop, I heard yesterday, and I asked the commissioner twice, you know, if he felt that this would in fact expand gambling, and he, I believe, said that he did not think so. And when in fact, there's a very real possibility that the availability of, as I would call the pull tabs, the paper slot machines, will expand. And so, I don't know if the commissioner would like to say that's probably not the case or not, but I just don't, you know, I think there are aspects of this bill that we've got to have, and they're important ones.
Okay, let's get on to the question and then Representative Phillips, I will ask a follow-up on that.
Just on the point that Representative Davidson brought up about the license for a pull tab, the owner of a bar to have a pull tab vendor license, just specifically on that, applying to the economics of that particular bar. Economics is based a great deal on the value of the facility and what you could gain from it by a sale. If he, if the owner, operator of the pull tab of the bar, were to sell his bar, he could not sell his license for pull tabs along with that, could he? Isn't that in his own name? And he could not, that would not be a viable economic factor in the sale of his business, because the new owner would then have to come in and get their own permit or license.
You're correct, and what it is this is a vendor endorsement in here. It's still the permittee's permit. They could not transfer with the facility.
Right, thank you.
Mr. I would like to ask if you could expand on what goes into a consideration, and this is a real consideration of many people that have expressed an opinion on this bill and on this issue in total, but whether this bill, as opposed to the bill that's in place, if this totally fails, I guess a fair statement would be, could you compare the proliferation of gambling under the scenario that this bill fails and this bill passes?
Representative Porter, Chairman Porter, it's difficult for us to speculate on all of these issues. I would say that there is probably some credence to the argument that there is a total market out there somewhere for people who are interested in gaming and in pull tabs. And right now there's so many opportunities for them to go either to a bingo hall or to a Rippy World or one of the bars that there's probably so much of a total market out there. You might see some redistribution through this, but you may not see an expansion of gaming itself. There's just so much pull tab money out there that people are willing to spend if they want to play them. There's a lot of places that they can go and play them. But this will redistribute is the income from it and increase that amount to charity.
Representative Phillips.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On that point alone, there is nothing in existing law, not taking this new law into consideration, there's nothing in existing law today to prohibit the expansion of pull tab operations should any bar want to get into
That's
it.
Correct.
Isn't that
Every
correct?
Bar in Alaska could have pull tab.
If they so desired.
That's correct.
Thank you.
I think that was the point I was trying to make.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. This just makes it easier for the bar owner to get involved in this? Is that
no, this will make it harder because he has to give more money away. That's the point of all this.
I don't mean to be frustrating to you, Mr. Chairman, but...
Well, I mean, it's been said a number of times.
Mr. Chairman, could I just, on that point alone, I don't think it makes it easier or harder or anything. What it does is says, at this point in time, in existing law, we give 10%. In new law, we're going to give 30%.
15%.
Or 15 now, 15 and it will be 30. It's not going to make it harder or easier. Those factors will stay the same. And if a person wants to do it, knowing that they've got to put 30% into the charity, that's a decision, business decision they make.
Representative Phillips, through the chair, and with this bill, if you do go to a vendor at a bar, the number is 50%.
50?
50%.
At a bar?
At a bar, that's correct. It's even higher for a bar because they have already paid for a lot of their overhead. They don't have a lot of additional costs. And that's paid for at the time of delivery, the date of the license.
No, very legal. Are there any other questions of the commissioner? I should inform the committee that additionally John Hansen is here with Vision Gaming. If there are any technical questions, he can answer them, or is probably the best person to try to answer them. And also the sponsors, Representative Kennedy.
I would bring up, to Mr. Hanson, I would bring up the technicality there, if I may.
Certainly.
Thank you. Mr. Hanson, playing the devil's advocate, I own a bar. My neighbor across the street does not own a bar. He only has to give up 30% of his proceeds. I have to give up 50% because I own a bar. You're discriminating against me because I own a bar. How does Alaska law handle that?
Through the chair, Representative Phil. The person that would be able to continue paying 30% would be a person that we license as an operator. And that person, number one, would not be required to pay for those pull tabs when they're delivered. That licensed operator would be able to conduct gaming basically as they are now, and by providing services to the committee that the committee doesn't choose to do, such as purchasing the pull tabs, conducting the gaming activity, preparing financial reports. Essentially, the committee will get its check once a month that it currently is. It's just that the check will double. For the committee that chooses to go to that vendor is actually an endorsement. The vendor license is an endorsement of the committee's permit. The committee is required to purchase the pull tabs, to deliver the pull tabs, to be responsible for the accounting of the pull tabs, to prepare the financial reports, and all the other things that are required in the law to conduct this gaming activity. So if there is an incentive in doing it yourself by getting the 50% up front, and yet there is the paperwork. The person that chooses the operator essentially gets the check once a month.
Thank you.
Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hanson, I spoke with the director of one of my local nonprofits this morning. In 8 years of holding a permit for gaming, they've only had one person come by to check on that permit. How will the division that you're responsible for here be increasing its oversight, since there will be more money involved for nonprofits, but also perhaps maybe more money changing hands?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davidson, one of the beauties of this bill from a regulator's standpoint is that if it passes, it has built-in percentages that do not exist in current law. In current law, organizations that don't choose to use the services of an operator have no expense limitations. Therefore, many groups are doing literally millions of dollars worth of gaming and ending up with no net proceeds. Okay? By establishing fixed percentages on ideal net of these pull tab games, we, in essence, would be able to ensure compliance by simply doing desk audits. Now, that doesn't take the place of field inspections and player protection and proper permits being posted on the premises, but we have a staff of 12 people currently, four of which are field investigators. I believe that under the current law that we have today, we have substantial compliance with our licensing requirements.
Why do you believe that?
From the amount of inspections and the investigators that I have out in the field that basically have touched every community in Alaska within the last 3 years. We have a full complement of investigators. Where I believe we're lacking in our regulation of this program is in the auditing and the insurance that the expenses that are being charged off on these games are proper. Under this bill, it will enable us to do those and accomplish those things much easier than we currently can.
Because of the percentage?
That's correct.
I continue, Mr. Chairman. So, Mr. Hanson, I believe, did you say yesterday in the work session we have 1,237 permits?
In 1992, we issued a total of 1,003 permits. 1,003 permittees were given permits. Of those permits, because a permittee can do several types of activity, and for instance could do pull tabs in two or three locations, there was 1,320 separate permits issued for pull tab activity exclusively.
Excuse me. 1,003 permittees, 1,320 exclusive pull tab.
Permits.
Permits.
Right. So
and
one permittee may get three permits if they have three locations, or one permit.
And how many inspectors did you say you had?
I have four investigators.
Four investigators.
That's correct.
Well, now, getting back to the permittees, permittee can still have a raffle and still make a direct contribution to a political candidate. Is that correct?
That's correct if the candidate meets the definition of a political organization. The candidate has to be affiliated with a political organization.
Right. So like, if a member of the Republican Party, I mean, a raffle could be, a permittee could have a raffle permit and could give that to the Republican Party, and that Republican Party could then give that to the candidate, or could the permittee give it directly to the candidate under this new law?
Either way. The permittee could either contribute to the party or could contribute to the candidate's organization if the candidate's organization was affiliated with a political party.
Under this current law?
That's correct.
I mean, under the
for rule? For raffles and other activity than pull tabs and bingo.
But now, that activity, that contribution by a permittee would be illegal for direct contribution to a lobbyist.
That's correct.
So what we have here is the irony of you can contribute directly to the person who is to be lobbied, but you cannot contribute to the person who will do the lobbying.
That's correct.
Isn't that out of sync?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davidson. There is not only in this bill, but also in under federal law, there's some distinctions between activities. For instance, the federal unrelated business income tax. It's applicable to pull tabs, but it's not applicable to raffles and other bingo activities. So there apparently is some distinctions that can be drawn by a social activity in a traditional way that a political party may raise funds or a candidate through raffles. Whereas pull tab activity is treated separately, not only in this bill, but in other areas.
Well, I don't want to take all the time, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much. You've been gracious.
May I add one thing?
Mr. Hanson?
We are preparing the list by zip code, which staff have requested. I wanted to bring them over here today, but it's a little difficult because we have to go through the zip code index. I know that Fairbanks had $58 million worth of gaming. That's the greater Fairbanks area. Juneau had about $14 million. I'm hoping to have the rest of that information by the end of the day.
Thank you very much.
Representative Phillips?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Hanson, this is either to you or to the commissioner. And it's just a question aside. Wasn't there any way we could have gotten a bill with a less onerous title than this?
Through the chair, Representative Phillips, I think that was a decision of the Senate. And you might ask Senator Pierce what her intentions were here, as I heard. But it wasn't so much to try to tie the hands of the House, but that this was such a contentious piece of legislation, and it had been so difficult to get it for the past 4 or 5 years. It was a way to try to put some kind of sideboards on the thing, if you will, to try to keep it from coming totally apart, because any series of amendments could peel off a couple people here or there, just frankly, politically speaking, and kill the whole thing so that we would have no gaming reform, and that's still a risk. I think that's why.
Thank you.
Okay, I have no one else on the list. Is there anyone else here that wishes to testify? Please confirm. Could you, for the record, give us your name and affiliation?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mark Higgins, and I'm representing the Alaska Charitable Games Association. I had not intended to testify, but I would like to address at least the aspect of the question whether or not this will indeed expand gaming and throw out some facts that I think that the committee should consider before passing the bill out. I don't think that there's any doubt that this will expand gaming. I think if anybody looks back to 2 years ago, before this administration shut down what was going on in bars, there were many, many more bars and gaming engaged in running pull tabs. A week ago or so in this committee, the commissioner testified that roughly 80 to 90% of bars were already doing it, or at some point there was testimony to that effect. When I heard that in Anchorage, our group contacted every bar in the phone book. Any liquor license in the phone book is a simple question. Do you sell cold hams? Out of 295 locations contacted, again, everyone in the phone book, only 30 said yes. I supplied that list to the committee, sent it down, and said, don't trust us, this is objective. You can verify this information yourself. That represents 11% of the bars in Anchorage are currently selling cold hams. Certainly not the 50% that was stated yesterday, and not the 80 or 90% that was stated last week. This is objective information that can be verified. A lot of the bars that are currently selling it are also fraternal organizations, and I don't know if that's been stated before. They're Elks or Moose or other private clubs. They are not private or not public locations. And I think that would constitute a big chunk of any liquor licenses that are currently involved in cold tabs. And I think those situations, all of the money is going to the charity. It certainly does not present the opportunity for abuse that I think will exist if the expansion is in every bar or liquor outlet in Alaska. So I don't think there's a question that this will amount to an expansion of gaming. I mean, I don't think it'll be a redirection of resources. There was a bar owner in Anchorage that was doing this 2 years ago who told me personally he was making $20,000 to $30,000 a month off of selling cold tabs. In fact, it was flooding his business. I think it offers a tremendous economic incentive for bars to get into the business. I think that does transfer with the sale of the business and the overall value of a particular enterprise. And I think that the purchaser of the business would recognize that depending on the volume involved. I think that'll encourage expansion. I think that the current existing situation makes it much more difficult if you're a bar to get into the business. Under existing law as it stands right now, you have to post a bond as an operator would. You have to comply with reporting requirements. The bond is up to $100,000 if you do any kind of volume. You can post real property, but you must put up something for public protection so that if you abuse the process, the state or the charity have a right, or the public itself has a right to come back against your bond. Bars, as a rule, have not wanted to do that, and that's why they're not as many engaged in. The only other way a bar can currently do it is a volunteer, essentially. And not many of them are willing to do it for nothing. Once this law is authorized, they will have a direct economic incentive to get involved in gaming, and I think you'll see a tremendous proliferation without the public protection of a bond or any of the other requirements that are in existing law. In essence, it would make it a lot easier for a bar to be involved in gaming activities, and I think it would expand it by at least 100%. And I think if anybody looks back at the Gaming Reform Act of 1988, none of us involved in that process envisioned standalone full-tab stores. I mean, it wasn't something we even understood. We thought about the bar situation, we addressed that, we talked about the operator situations. As soon as that law was enacted, you had these cold tab stores popping up all over the place. And sure enough, they're legal. None of us envisioned that. And I think they've become a constant reminder to the community that there's a lot of gaming activity going on, good or bad. There was a definite proliferation of gaming. I think the other thing the committee might want to consider with regard to the liquor establishments, if it is desirable to expand it into that area more, it's been stated that 50% will go to the charity up front. That is correct. But what's not being said is that the charity then has to pay for the cost of the product, which is about 12%, and then the state tax, which is another 3%. So in essence, what we're going to give the charities is about 35%. That's not much more than they give in any other situation, even though the bar has a lot less overhead to engage in this type of activity. Their overhead is fixed, they set jars up and they sell. In those situations, the goal ought to be to get as much money as possible to the charities. 2 years ago, the liquor industry testified that they were willing to accept 25%. This bill is offering them 50%. There has not been a policy reason for that state in one committee or in the center of the House. And I think that we ought to recognize that we're not really giving the charities 50% of this bill. We're giving them at most 35%. There is no restriction in this bill that would prevent a private individual from coming in from the side, say myself or anybody else in the private sector, and saying to the bar or to the charity, I know some bar owners, I'll get you some real good locations. For 10% of your net, I'll run out and make sure you get the high volume locations. So the charity, who isn't going to want to engage in going and talking to bar owners, says, sure, that sounds like a good deal to me. We're getting 50, I only have to give you 10. Well, out of their 35, then another 10% goes to a private individual who also strikes a deal on the other end with the bar for 15% of their cut. So the charity ends up with maybe 20% out of this activity. And I think we need to recognize we're not really talking about giving them 50%, and there is no protection for the public. Once there is no bond, there's nothing to prevent that bar from short pulling, or once they recognize that the winners haven't come out of the jar, to change it and rip players off who are inebriated or anything else. I think we need to recognize that potential definitely exists on both ends. The public is not protected as it is in existing law. And certainly the charity is not going to get 50%. At most, they're going to get 35%. In a lot of cases, you'll find they're going to get 50 or 20% because of what this bill would allow. And I raised that issue to the gaming director a few weeks ago as a concern about the legislation. The only other thing I would add is that I have a chart that I'd like to distribute to the committee. Based on state figures, I would like the committee at least to know that, in fact, let me distribute this if I could. I think that there's been some misinformation handed out for a few years on actual nets and stuff with regard to what's really going to the charities. There's been a lot of testimony in front of a lot of committees that, you know, whether we're talking about bars or operators or anything else, that really only 8% is getting the charities out of this $200 million industry. And what I'd like to show you here is I took the state's figures 2 years ago. At the same time they were testifying that only 8% was getting the charities, I took their figures and subtracted what is paid immediately back to the players in prize awards. This is money that the charities don't have their hands on, the operator doesn't have their hands on, it goes immediately back out the door to pay off the winners. And it represents about 85% of the gross in the industry. So what you've got here represented in two different graphic forms is the state's figures. In the first page, it's showing an 8% net to the charities, but it's including all of the prizes that nobody has control over. If you take those prizes out, you'll notice on the next page the percentage of net jumps up tremendously. It's effectively about 40%. Once you take the money out that nobody has control over, the charities are in fact getting about 40% of the bottom line net. If you look at the pie chart, I think it becomes even more graphic. States representing 8% is going to the charities, when in reality about 43% in 1989 and 40% in 1988. I think the gaming director has figures right now that show that it's about 38% overall under existing law. So I think that needs to be recognized as well. This will increase the amount of money going to charities, but certainly is not going to double the amount of money going to charities. And I think that the figures that have been thrown around have not been really very accurate.
Representative James?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead,
I want to question your calculations for this, because it's my opinion that the numbers, when we're talking about 15%, we're talking 15% of the ideal gross, which is after the prizes have been taken out, not out of the total gross. And it looks like your graph here is in the total sales of the pull tabs to the percentage that's going to the nonprofit. So what you're doing is comparing apples and oranges. It's not the same percentage that we're talking about.
Representative, that's exactly my point. This is the state's way of conveying information for the last few years, and it is not the same. And that's been a problem. It's created an impression that there is rampant abuse in this industry, when in fact the charities are getting a return that averages anywhere between 30% and 40%, which is better than most businesses in Alaska can do at the bottom line net. That is exactly my point in showing the two differences. Did I miss your point? I'm sorry.
You sure did, sir. First of all, in the very first graph that you have here, mm-hmm. when you're talking about what you're saying is 8% that they've been getting, well, let's go to the second one as an example. Here where you're saying they're getting 30% of what's left over, and you're subtracting out the expenses and the taxes, what they're talking about giving is 15% of the net proceeds, which would be the less the taxes and the paid out. That's not what you've got here, right?
This represents all of the money that's available after the players have been paid for the prize award. So all the money that's left over, once you've paid off the players, is represented in these graphs. The percentage of that that's actually getting to the charities as the bottom line is represented as well. And it ends up being around 40%. So it's something that I have challenged the gaming director in the past to say, let's at least be honest in the real percentages so that legislators are informed. So they know that the situation is not crying out for abuse. There are certainly areas that can be cleaned up. The industry, there's a lot of reform that can be done. I'm not saying that some of what's in this bill does not do that, but I think that there's been some inaccuracies in the numbers that have been generated.
Any further questions? I have one. I believe in that testimony. It covered quite a few bases. You did say that this bill will provide more money to charities than existing law. Is that correct?
I think that's accurate, yes, sir.
Are there any other questions?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Higgins, if your opinion that it would in fact increase the amount, could you explain where you think the new law would in fact ensure greater amounts going to the nonprofits?
I think the primary situation that will guarantee that occurs, Representative, is in situations where either operators or charities themselves running are currently not meeting 30%, and there are some in the industry that are not. Now, supposedly under existing law, the department has the authority to enforce that by reviewing their expenses and throwing out any expenses that's not reasonable. And I'm glad you brought that point up. The one other thing I wanted to address, and do that as a response, was multiple beneficiaries. I've got, I think it was distributed to the committee, a hearing last week where a situation in Anchorage, an operator switched from being an operator to being a multiple beneficiary. Just because he's subleasing in the same space that he used to use as an operator, he's charging him $176,000 or more, roughly, a year as an in-between person. The state tried to challenge that operator on that. A hearing was held last week, and the hearing officer said, essentially, we don't have any authority over this person. He's not an operator. He doesn't have to file. He's outside of our purview. And under this multiple beneficiary situation, we're going to put that in statute. And I think there's some concerns about that as well. So I think there are situations where people are not meeting the 30%. There's a Catholic bingo in Fairbanks that is run by the priests and the church that only make 6 to 8% a year. That's all they can return. Under this bill, they'll be out of business. They will not be able to make the 30%, and they have not been able to make it.
Why is that?
They just don't have enough players to justify that kind of return with their expenses. There was an organization in Anchorage 2 years ago when vendors were authorized that was self-directed. Alaska Mental Health had 40 locations at quick stops and gas stations. They were only able to return 30 was the top they ever hit. They testified 2 years ago that anything over about 25 would probably put them out of business using their own accountants and totally running the games themselves. So I think there's some questions there. There's certainly abuse, and some people need to be paying more. And I think that is a legitimate policy goal. But I think that the state also has the authority right now to implement that and say these expenses aren't reasonable, whether it's an operator or anybody else, and to take their license. They have that authority in state law.
If I may continue. Senator Davidson? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Higgins, in your judgment, you've indicated by your testimony that we're probably going to see a proliferation of what I call paper slot machines, the full tech business. The first question is, what percentage of the gaming problem do you attribute to that part of the issue here? What percentage of the problems that we're dealing with are brought about because of pill tabs? And secondly, in your judgment, what do you think the legislature should be doing to adopt public policy that, in fact, would discourage the proliferation of gambling and alcohol through bars?
I think that about 80% of the gross receipts are accounted for in pull tabs. So when you're talking about charitable gaming, the majority is coming from pull tab sales. I think that the policy question on whether or not we should combine alcohol and gambling is only a judgment that you can make. But I think that if the decision is made that we should endorse this and put it in statute and say we're going to authorize this and legitimize it and expand it and at least make sure that there are protections for the players, for the patrons that are inebriated and playing pull tabs, that there are protections for the charities and that the maximum return is returned to those charities. Again, I don't know why we're offering 50% to the bars when 2 years ago they were willing to accept 25%. And those are the kind of questions. Beyond that, I think that control becomes a key issue. I complained a few weeks ago that the Senate bill is drafted, would have allowed pull tab machines virtually anywhere. You could have had them in the hall out here. They could have been owned by anybody. There would have been no human interaction. And I said there's a situation there that is crying out for abuse, and recognize that is a potential of this bill. It was eventually changed, but it was only after a lot of loud screaming about that. So I think that those are the kind of decisions that I would argue. Just understand, this is an industry that offers a lot of cash. There's a lot of people out there that will find a way to skirt the system. And any type of reform had better be truly reform and not an opportunity for abuse. And I think the bill as drafted will expand that opportunity for abuse. And I think you'll see it immediately. I don't think it will be a delayed reaction.
One more. Mr. Higgins, protection of the players and the clients, how is that accomplished in this kind of industry?
I think that there are tracking mechanisms in existing law. In the bar situation, I would suggest that you would want to have tighter controls and simply licensing as a vendor. You know, make them put up a bond that can be real property. Make them do something that makes them accountable. Make their liquor license on the line if they engage in abuse. That would certainly make them very aware of the state laws. And I think those are the types of things that really need to be looked at as far as actual gaming reform. And I think that this bill is a shell and will definitely increase the amount of charities, but I think that there's a lot of things that will occur as a result of that.
Thank you for your patience, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are there any other questions, Mr. Chairman? Not calling it. We have two other people here, as I said, that can testify. Is there anyone else in the room that wishes to testify? Here we recognize Representative Moses. Welcome. Okay, what is the wish of the committee? Representative Davidson.
My wish is to have the commissioner or Mr. Hansen respond to some of the statements of Mr. Higgins, because it seems that we're being told two different things.
Could the commissioner and Mr. Hansen join us at the table and too much opinion response?
I'll respond most specifically to the numbers that were stated. In terms of the number of operators, what we found is that out of 1,320 permit locations, 527 of those were places that sold alcohol, and that was the figure. We never claimed that 80% to 90% of the bars in Alaska sold both halves. What we did say is that when we looked through the bars here in Juneau, that that's what we found. We didn't claim that was statewide. They're almost in all the bars here in Juneau. And in terms of the figures of overall net return, we were very careful to go over these with the committee in detail yesterday, and those were the figures that we showed you on the adjusted gross income. And we also told you of the difference that when a permittee ran it themselves, that they returned 45%, but when they went to an operator, they got 31%. Well, the reason for that is that some operators voluntarily pay more than 30% because they're doing it for the charities. We have an operator here in Juneau that pays 40% voluntarily because he really believes in the soccer club and the Little League and some of these others. We have some operators that ride the line right at 15% and not a penny more. So that would result in an increase to charity. Another thing that would be a huge increase in the amount to charities is that what's considered charities now, and is within this 31% figure, are organizations like the one that I showed you, where 100% of their money is going to campaign contributions and to lobbyists. And all that would stop. That money would go to charity. So it's our estimation that you'd have, now you've got $16 million, it's our estimation that you'd have approximately an additional $10 million going to charity under this bill. But again, that's speculation.
President Hurley?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for either one of you, maybe Mr. Hansen, and this is just for the record. It's based on a statement here in Senator Pierce's, her sponsor statement. I just want to make sure this is true. She says all nonprofits, including political parties and labor organizations, could still use raffles and other permitted games to earn money, which then could be used, which they could then direct to as contributions to candidates.
That is correct.
That's
under this bill.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that's clear for the record.
Political parties can still use raffles. That has been a traditional form of fundraising for them, and it requires you to get all your members out to sell the raffle tickets and things like that. So this bill does not preclude political parties from doing a raffle to raise funds for campaign contributions.
Am I correct that on a raffle, the person who's sponsoring the raffle's name and the number and all that has to be on the ticket itself so that there's no confusion as to what you're contributing to?
That's correct.
Mr. Chairman, I might just follow up on that too. And I know Representative Davidson's got an amendment to address this issue. I don't see any difference between these kinds of organizations being able to contribute to candidates or to be able to fund a lobbyist to come down and do that. So I know Mr. Davidson's got an amendment to address that.
Representative Phillips?
Oh, I was just going to speak on the raffles. That's been a traditional fundraising source for political parties, but way before poll tabs was even introduced into Alaska, and political parties have been using raffles to raise money for candidates or any other organization to raise money for their proceeds. So I think you've got to separate the issue of raffles out, because even if poll tabs were banned in Alaska, you're still going to have raffles.
Representative James?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's my point exactly. I consider raffles to be different than, but what you're, but I understood yesterday when we were talking that yes, we could have raffles, but no, we couldn't spend that money for candidates, and that was the thing that was.
That's not it. It was lobbyists.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
So, Chairman,
Representative Davidson,
Commissioner. So, if the Homer Independent Ski Committee, which is I'm trying to think of that group of the ski lift people, they had a raffle, they could make a direct contribution to, say, Representative Phillips, right?
That is correct.
Mr. Chairman, I have a couple of questions I'd like to pursue with these gentlemen because. In view of the fact of some of the points that Mr. Higgins brought up, if I may. Commissioner, would you give us your perspective on the idea of requiring a bond or a bar license being withheld, having some kind of stick held over the bar owner in this kind of situation? I didn't quite understand Mr. Higgins' point about how the bar now would be more free than ever before to engage in this activity of poll tabs. And what kind of leverage would be healthy and yet fair for that kind of situation?
Well, perhaps I could ask John Hansen to tell you what are the sanctions in this bill for any bar that violates this. It's not tied to the liquor license, but it is, if you want to tell him specifically what it is.
First of all, the requirement for security is to, when an operator has to post
is to ensure that the committee is going to get a return for that activity this operator is conducting. By requiring the bar to pay that money up front, you have eliminated the requirement for security. In addition to that, this bill gives us as regulators provisions that far exceed what we currently have by providing the commissioner the right to issue an emergency order to cease and desist. It gives the right to suspend, revoke, or deny a permit for up to 5 years for a vendor location. It also ties directly to the permittee's permit. It is an extension of the permittee's permit. Therefore, if there are problems occurring in the bar, the endorsement is canceled and possibly suspension of the permittee's permit. So it stretches out what we don't currently have by...
And who can initiate that? If you're a patron in a bar and you feel like you've been had,
yes,
you can initiate this kind of action.
How we do it now, how we take care of business, if there's a complaint, we turn it over to an investigator. He does an investigation. He may make a finding. Within our system, the finding is sent to the chief of compliance. At that time, if there's an action needed, whether it's a suspension or a revocation of a license, he will take that action, and the permittee is entitled to a hearing process.
One concern I would have, Mr. Chairman, is that with the investigators spread so thin, it seems like we're only going to be dealing with people who register complaints. But could you gentlemen please give me the feeling that you have regards the 50-50 split, if in fact we were to include the tax and the cost of the manufacture of the tabs to the bar owner, what would be unfair about that?
Logistically, it would be difficult. The cost of each game differs, the ideal net differs, the amount of the tax differs.
But why couldn't the permittee just collect that when he collects his 50%?
They would have to have an exact amount, including the tax, and because this is subject to the unrelated business income tax, to compute all of the taxes that may be applicable to that game would be very difficult to do it on the spot. It would depend on the other expenses that they may incur while they're selling, after they sold the game, if they pay for a bookkeeper, et cetera, it's a net income tax. So to compute the exact tax liability of that game and to try to pass that on to the vendor would be difficult.
But the cost would not be that difficult.
The cost of the game?
Yeah.
No.
It's about 10%. In addition, though, we want to have the permittee, the person in charge that we license to be in charge of this game, to be physically involved with the delivery of those pull tabs and receiving the check up front to keep from happening. Mr. Higgins talked about of people getting in between this thing to try to basically broker it. Now, if any money were spent, as he raised on that, to pay somebody to broker that, that would be an illegal expense under this law and would not be allowed.
One of the provisions in this bill, as a regulator of this thing, our law talks now currently about if you're responsible for the gaming activity or if you're the member in charge, that you're prohibited if you have these criminal records. But it doesn't define what those prohibitions are. And in this bill, we go into on our definitions of specifically who's prohibited from doing what, and we have covered just about everything. So we have very clear, concise law of if you've got a prohibitive record, you can't deliver pull tabs, you can't take money, you can't be involved in that gaming activity. Strengthens
that. That doesn't have anything to do with the guy that sees an opportunity here to broker a situation. And I don't understand how you can, deal with the person who's, here's an opportunity for another entrepreneur, right? I mean, a guy comes up and he sees an opportunity here to work on behalf of the permittee. If he shakes the bar, not shake down the bar, but if he gets a bit out of that and a bit from the permittee, you don't have any way of following up with what the bar owner is going to pay the guy. And at the same time, why does it necessarily have to be a known amount of what the permittee would give that fellow who's going to broker? I mean, how are you going to find that out?
Because they've got to, when they deliver the game, they declare what the amount is. They register all these games with us. They showed you yesterday the barcodes and everything like this. We've got all of
so
this
you know
on
exactly
computer.
What money they got and where it
and
went.
Then they've
got
to show us what they did
what
with
they
their 50%. 10% is going to Joe Schmo for a brokerage fee to the bar, then that's illegal.
In the provisions of the bill, in 05-15-188, we describe that
the member in charge delivers the tabs, gets 50% of the ideal net, and is required by check to deposit in the permittee's checking account. Once we have it in the checking account, we have a hook.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to say in general, there's some probably pretty sensational aspects of this bill that have gotten a lot of coverage, but to us as regulators of this, some of the most important pieces of it are these specific handles that we're putting on this industry. And some of them will really save us from the amount of personnel time that we need. It gives us very clear ways to track it. And we're trying to be very mindful of not creating something here that's going to require a large additional bureaucracy to manage.
Representative Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, I want to go back to just a little technicality in the bill. And that is, and you know, completely removed from the discussion at hand, but the issue of somebody in-state manufacturing pull tabs.
Yes.
That issue. And in the bill it says a person may not manufacture pull tabs in the state and may not sell or distribute a pull tab that a person has manufactured outside of the state to persons in the state unless the person has received a pull tab manufacturer's license issued by the department. Why didn't we just make it a blanket state law that they had to be manufactured in the state? This would be a good,
well,
good point in the law to do that. Why didn't you go that way?
Through the chair, maybe I can answer that. In the entire United States, there's only 10 manufacturers of pull tabs.
We can start a new Alaskan industry.
Actually, some states do distribute their own pull tabs, but they contract out with manufacturers. This takes a tremendous printing press. It's generally done in the daytime at companies that do printing for newspapers. To get the cost of these tickets down to where they are, which is about 2 cents each at the distributor, at the distributor level is about 2 cents. They make these things for fractions, and it takes a big amount of volume to do that. And I don't think that we could prohibit out-of-state manufacturer pull tabs. What this bill does do, though, it licenses those out-of-state manufacturers which are currently not licensed by us.
And is there a fee charged on that?
$500 per license.
Okay. And is it a renewable fee?
Once a year.
All right. Thank you.
Just to follow up on that, I understand that the license, the $500 fee, is awfully low compared to what the states get. Is that true?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know specifically what all other states charge. I do know that the maximum I've ever heard of being charged is $2,500. When I discussed these provisions, and because as I discussed yesterday, we're adopting the Niagara standards, which most manufacturers adhere to, I discussed with them, you know, how they felt about the $500 fee, and none of them wanted to pay it, but they didn't have an objection to it. I think they would pay. Okay,
what I would like to do is recognizing the time and recognizing that we have, I don't know how many amendments do you guys have?
It depends on how the bill.
Yeah.
13 here.
13?
No, he's two. I have one. I'm apparently in the room with him or more.
Probably 10.
10? Okay. Let's keep going with those. I have one in front of me that I guess everybody has.
Mr. Chairman, before we step down, if I might just ask, and this relates to the question of the title of the bill, that if you do decide to make amendments, we would ask that you would make the resolution allowing those amendments of the title to be specific to the amendments that you wish to address, rather than opening up the entire title to the bill. You can go either way.
I'm sorry.
Resolution.
Would you repeat that?
I'm saying that if you choose to do amendments to the bill that require a change to the title of the bill, that in your resolution to change the title of the bill, that you would restrict it to those amendments only, rather than change and have the resolution open up the entire bill. You can go either way. A resolution can just make this a bill related to charitable gambling, which would make it wide open, free for all on the floor, or your resolution can state for the purpose of a specific amendment. We would request a specific amendment if you choose to do so.
Okay, I would like to ask if you guys have the time that during the discussion of these amendments,
we'll stay right here. We'll be available to you.
President James and Representative Davidson.
Yeah, I just would like to clarify something and see if I understand the procedure. This is a Senate bill that has come over to the House with a title that is longer than the bill. And if the only way, as I understand it, that we can change the title is by a concurrent resolution passed by both houses, is that what you're saying? And so what you're saying is that if we have an amendment, that the amendment also is tied to a concurrent resolution that would need to be passed by the House and by the Senate to give us permission to change the title?
Yeah, you can make that a very specific amendment, or you could make it just a blanket.
Okay. My next concern about this at this point in time before we go any further is that I think we at this committee need to determine whether we want this bill passed this year or not. And if not, then I just as soon go do something else. And if we do, then I just as soon go do something else.
Let me put it this way. I have not asked the committee to, I've asked it an awful lot of you in terms of time. But in terms of personal preference, I haven't asked your consideration too often, but I would like to see this bill passed this year. I feel very strongly about it. So as you have the ability, I would appreciate your hanging in.
As amended?
Then I would.
I certainly intend to listen, but I think we have heard in another body most of these amendments.
Before we go any further, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to also comment that I'd like to see this bill passed this year, and I don't believe any amendments will let that happen.
I would like to second that, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Moses.
As sponsor of another bill that's being worked on, and finance, which is identical to the one before you, I think any attempt to amend this bill is just an attempt to try and kill our guilty.
Appreciate you. Representative Norton.
It's true that we follow the uniform rules that we have to have concurrent resolution pass both by submitting the title. The legislature can also choose to ignore the uniform rules. If this bill passed into law, there's nothing the courts would say that it would invalidate the bill. So it's a matter of, I mean, if the worst came to worst, we could pursue that.
Mr. Chairman, I believe, if I may respond to that, that this body has elected not to violate any uniform rules. I would not want this committee to be the one to start it. President Davis?
Regards this bill, Mr. Chairman, last time I checked, we still did not have a unicameral legislature. So as much as I'd like to see these problems addressed, I do not think that it behooves us to follow the lead of another body. That
well, we can say Senate here if we want to.
Well, I just, you know, there are losers and gainers in this legislation. And I think we're not doing our public duty if we don't, in fact, do what we think we have to do to level the playing field and protect whatever we have to protect and get a law here that accomplishes the best possible law addressing this kind of activity.
Let me just address one thing in response to that, and then I really will ask them to get on with the amendments. I will consider the amendments. Everybody has the opportunity to do what they think is right on them. I think it is very appropriate to recognize the ramifications of our acts, but certainly does not preclude hearing amendments, and we certainly will. To that end, and in some of the testimony that we have heard things that, well, this is okay, but we can do this, this is okay, we can do that. I'm kind of reminded of, I used to get a kick out of officers coming to me in my previous life and saying that I have completed my investigation. There is no such thing as a complete investigation. You stop an investigation and decide that for the moment you're going to stop it. This bill has, in my estimation, an awful lot of good things in it, and I could think of one or two more that I'd like to see in it. But at some point in time, you have to make a decision to stop and perhaps start again in a year or two if you'd like to. And I think, for what it's worth, that this there is an awful lot of good in here, and it is time to stop. So for that in mind, I'm told that the amendment that we had in front of us was not offered by a member of this committee, so I will go to Representative Garland.
It was not withdrawn.
Okay.
I would have a tendency to irritate folks.
It would have a tendency to irritate people, and I probably don't have a vote. Mr. Chairman, in terms of the House of Representatives, we're not stopping now, we're starting. This is the first hearing that this bill's had in this body. And so we are I think it is totally proper for our body to consider each of the amendments that may have been offered in the Senate, and some of these which have. But Cliff and I are going to offer some amendments and basically work from what you might consider more expansive amendments to less expansive amendments. And the amendment here, which has got V-38 on the top, what this amendment does is it prohibits the sale of poll tabs in the state of Alaska. And I do the
object.
We have a motion to, well, identify this as amendment number one.
If I might just for a little bit of explanation, I think that there's a lot of gambling activity that take place in the state that has some value. I think that there's the social activity involved with bingo, with raffles, with auctions and that kind of thing it's a reason that to me justifies, it's a game basically.
Auctions? I didn't know that was gaming.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't
know.
Raffle. Could be, I guess. Raffle. But I can't see any redeeming value, frankly, in running pull tabs. It's a mindless activity. It's not a social activity for the most part. And we had it wasn't that long ago in Alaska when there were no pull tabs, and I think that charities were still able to operate without them. So without going on at length on the amendment, I'd ask you to vote for it.
Any further discussion?
Hi,
Kathy. We have a motion and objection. Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Representative Cole?
No.
Representative Davidson?
Yes.
Representative Green?
Yes.
Representative Cutt?
No.
Representative Melvin?
Yes.
Vice Chair James?
No.
Chairman
Ford? No. Amendment 1 fails.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Davidson?
I'd like to offer amendment number 2. And we've been kind enough to supply these.
I appreciate that.
Mr. Chairman, since we are not going to outlaw pull tabs before they outlaw us, I would like to at least allow local communities to prohibit pull tabs. And the reason I'm offering this amendment is because I think the practical effect would be to save what little cash may be left out in rural Alaska, especially in some of our villages. And we do know that rural areas support a disproportionate share of the gaming in Alaska. So without getting long and drawn out in my statements and the rationale for offering this amendment, I would offer you amendment number 2.
Object.
We have a motion to number 2 of allowing a local option for just pull tabs. For point of information, could I ask the commissioner how this relates to the local option that's in the bill?
Well, the communities would be able to eliminate either operators in the bill or eliminate vendors. However, permittees would still be able to operate pull tabs on their own. So it would just further allow the community, this amendment would allow the community to stop even permittees from running their own pull tab operation, essentially stopping all pull tabs. You do have the protections in the bill to eliminate operators and vendors.
Mr. Chairman, I would ask if the representative from the administration would either support or not support this kind of
amendment. No, his opinion of the matter.
Well, no, I want to know what the position of the administration would be on this. I know that we have a written statement here from the governor's own pen that indicates that he would like to ban all gambling, and you know I'm somewhat inclined in that way myself.
I'll write you one of those myself.
but I, you know, I think that if the governor could buy off on this one, why not? You know, and it would be good perhaps to convince some people who I know are wrestling with this issue and provide as much cover as we can, right?
I can give you that quickly if you'd like.
Commissioner?
There's some potential legal problems with this in that it's not municipalities. There aren't organizations that are set up to do elections. You've got anywhere there's 25 or more residents set up to do that. It's tied in with some sovereignty law and things like that. So that's why this bill was kept to municipalities only. So there are some problems with this amendment.
Well, I'd like to have a legal opinion on that. I don't know if Mr. Foose is a lawyer or not, but I'd like to have, before we take that as gospel, the attorney of the legislative legal is here. Maybe we could ask that person, Mr. Lockhart, I believe.
Mr. Lockhart? Do you have the amendment?
I am more than familiar with the amendments.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes,
Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Jerry Luckups, and I've been more than I wish to be familiar with charitable gaming over the last month or so of this session. The amendment tracks the local option language that is in the ABC statutes now. That was found to be constitutional by the Supreme Court just in the last year. It provides for municipalities, one, to exclude pull tabs within their boundaries, and also provides that unincorporated communities can ban pull tabs within their boundaries. It doesn't give the right to an IRA council to make that decision, but it gives a right to all of the people within the area to vote. The Secretary of State does the or Secretary, Lieutenant Governor takes care of the election process.
You've been here a long time, haven't you?
I have a question.
And so that's the way it works. I don't think there was an early proposal in this bill in the Senate to try to give this authority to an IRA council, a village corporation, to make the decisions. And that would have been clearly unconstitutional, I think, because they would be imposing their will upon people that were not members of the corporation, for example, non-natives in that area, and that would not fly. But the proposal that's used in the amendment is, I think, is constitutional.
Representative Phillips?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Luckup, did you draft the CS for Senate Bill 76 Finance? Is that
yes.
Your work? Then on page 7, section 3, where it says municipal regulation of operators, a municipality may by ordinance prohibit an operator or a vendor from conducting activities under this chapter within the municipality. In essence, that is the protection sought by this amendment, is that not?
It's part of it. The amendment goes a little further to these unincorporated communities. It allows these areas that are not incorporated as municipalities to make a decision to prohibit the sale of coal tabs within that area also. Just as those areas can also say they will prohibit the sale of alcohol or the possession of alcohol in those areas. And so to that extent, the amendment goes a bit further.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Chairman, in defense of the amendment?
Representative Davidson?
Thank you. I would just urge my colleagues once again to give due consideration to this. We know the kind of people who like to make a quick win are the people who can least afford it. I'm asking your assistance in helping these communities and people in these communities to ensure that what little cash is out there remains there and does not end up in the bar in a jar. And I just think it's the least we can do for people who I think are going to be suffering as a result of this legislation.
If I may respond, I don't have a problem with this. What I have a problem with is the fact that this would constructively kill the legislation this year and the benefits that we would receive from it. I would be happy to co-sponsor this amendment next year. But I really think that...
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask you a question.
I'm just responding, which I think I have the ability to do, to your reason for offering it, and I'm offering a reason that I don't think it's timely, so...
I mean, we know we have problems here, but the fact of the matter is, there is time. There's plenty of time here to do the job right, and I would ask that the members of the committee keep that in mind, because
I'll give you the last word.
I just think it's an important amendment to the bill before it.
Any further discussion? Can I have a roll call vote, please?
This is number 3.
This is number 2.
Representative.
Right, I'm sorry.
Representative Davidson?
Yes.
Representative Green?
Yes.
Yes.
Representative
Norton?
Yes.
Representative
Phillips?
No.
Vice
Chair Jim?
No.
Chairman
Corder?
No.
And
it fails?
The
vote was 3-2. We require 3 to
3
pass.
To 2 to
4.
Amendment fails.
Amendment fails. Plus 3 is 2.
Oh, we have 2 pass?
Yeah.
Yeah.
3
oh,
to 3.
Right.
Pass. Sorry. Representative Green?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I too would like to introduce an amendment to this bill. Is it your intention to continue this meeting now until we get through the amendments? Where
my desire to.
I'm just wondering about time constraints.
Maybe a 2-minute break.
If the committee would like a 5-minute recess,
for 3 hours, certainly.
Okay. I'll certainly entertain that.
That would be first amendment, you know, amendment if that would be reasonable. Or 2-minute break, 1-minute break.
Fine. Well, let's take a 10-minute break so that everybody can cover any possible contingency of a short nature. And we will recess and be back at 20 minutes to, please.
Yes.
Be back to here at 12 minutes to, 11 minutes to, and 5. And we have Representative Davidson. You had a minute? Oh, this one has been pulled.
I've pulled that minute.
Oh, behind the scenes.
No, actually, it's right here.
Yeah. This didn't you see him?
No.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I do have another amendment.
Yes, I'll have
it. And let me just trying to get my job.
Oh, this is...
Well, last one was full tabs.
No, I'm not counting.
So, this will be amendment number three.
Three, yes.
Representative Davidson. Mr. Chairman, this to allow committees to prohibit charitable giving, and it's a little more expansive than the last one. I thought we had a good chance on that one, so I didn't offer this. My intention was to offer it before we offered the last one, so I'd like to make a run at this one. This would, of course, have the practical effect of allowing local small rural villages to prohibit charitable giving. And the same arguments apply, and that people who will probably be most negatively impacted by what I perceive as expanded gambling opportunities in our state will be at least protected to the extent that they would be allowed to prohibit that activity in their own surroundings. So I would request the committee to give this bill that does have some social service importance due consideration. Okay, I guess,
is that
are you offering the, I offer the amendment. Okay, I'll object. The, again, I would not, I will co-sponsor this next year, but I just really fear the inability to get this passed of what it will provide. And for that reason, I will not support the amendment. Representative David, or Norman?
Mr. Chairman, I would co-sponsor also that bill, but I'm not so sure there will be a bill next year. If this bill passes the way it is, all the momentum for any gaming legislation will be gone, and I don't think there'll be much. I'm not sure that's the best strategy to pursue in terms of trying to get a good amendment to this bill or a good amendment to the law.
I don't think that there would be an objection to this amendment. So
you're going to vote yes?
But for the reason stated, I'm forced to vote no, but I really don't think that the next year, I'll make a commitment if that helps, that I'll co-sponsor the amendment next year. I mean, that the bill that was put in this provision. Well,
I don't have any problem with it
either
next year.
Well,
we
got to
offer it as a committee.
Yeah, we'll do it as a committee.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
the
committee
problem,
will.
Mr. Chairman.
This bill before us, I think, will give purveyors of alcohol not only added income, but also the ability to put as many jars on their bar as they can hold, and how many of those jars could be directed toward paying the expenses of various bar owners to come down here and lobby against this very bill, even if it's a committee bill. I think Mr. Toma is the one that made the point. I think without altering what we're doing here from the starting point, we are creating a situation where we'll never be able to track whatever amount of money comes from those jars and those bars for purposes of lobby.
Okay.
And
that's
so,
an expansive explanation of this particular amendment.
Well, I guess you got me started.
Well, I guess as often happens, you make your discussion on the bill during amendments. So, do you have anything else to add to that?
Well, I just would hope that the committee would see the light in the present situation.
Well, you make a point on that I think certainly is a consideration on the fact that. Now and it would continue in the current bill that these pull tabs will be in bars. Recognizing that probably most of us here at the table would rather that the whole thing go away, recognizing that is, of course. My personal point of view on the bar is this. A person has got $10, maybe nowadays $20, $30 in his pocket to go to the bar. If these weren't there, he might drink up his $30.
If there are pull tabs there, he might spend $10 on that. 50% of that, no, whatever, percentage of that, 30%, is now going to go to charity, and he's not going to be as polluted as he was. I mean, that might be rationalization, but since we have to put up with gambling anyway, why not look at it, you know, as positively as you can? Well, it sounds facetious. I'm not really being facetious. I think that's actually happening.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you made an excellent point. In fact, you let the genie out of the jar. We do, in fact, have the power to grant your wish. We can make this go away. I mean, that resides with yourself. You said we all wish this could go away?
No, this bill in front of us does not particularly get that amendment that was going around here did.
Okay. Call for the question?
Call for the question. We've had amendment number 3 offered and objection. Roll call vote, please.
Representative Dean?
Yes.
Representative Huff?
No.
Representative Baldwin?
Yes.
Representative Phillips?
No.
Representative
Davidson?
Yes.
Vice Chair
James?
No.
Chairman Porter?
No.
Mr. Chairman, before we go into the next
amendment. Representative Davidson?
Before we go into the next amendment, I would like to raise a point of inquiry because it is my understanding that on a previous, well, that's not my point of understanding. On a previous amendment, you allowed 2 members sitting at this table to pass. The amendment failed, according to your count, with 3 nays and 2 yeses. 2 people who were here at this table did not, in fact, vote, as I understand, they should have voted, understanding that they have the opportunity to pass, but it should come back to them. So, you know, rather than pursue it legally through...
Mr. Chairman, I call for a revote on that question on amendment number 2.
Okay, I'm gonna ask...
You're asking